Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. So this week's guest is Toni Brodbar. She is the deputy representative with the UN Women Multi-Country Office for the Caribbean. Previously, Ms. Brodbar was the acting head of office. Before this assignment, she'd worked with UN Women Fiji in the multi-country office there as lead of the Advancing Gender Justice in the Pacific Programme. Ms. Brodbar also served as a gender specialist for the United Nations Development Programme in South Africa and established what is now the UN Women Country Office in Haiti. Ms. Brodbar's work experience also includes lecturing in international relations and development studies at Nanshan University in China, directing and co-producing a film on Haiti. She received her first degree from the University of the West Indies, Mona Campus, and has a postgraduate degree in development studies and business administration from the London School of Economics and the ESAD Business School in Barcelona. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm introducing Ms. Toni Ann Brodbar. So, Toni, thank you so much for joining me on this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. I would have done a short brief bio about you at the top of the show, but obviously I know there's a lot more to tell. So tell us a bit more about yourself, your humble beginnings, and where you come from, please.
Wow, humble beginning.
I'm assuming you were humble.
I got stymied there. Well, I am, I like to say, a Caribbean woman, person. I was born in Trinidad and Tobago, where Carnival is going right now.
Yes, yes.
Raised in Trinidad and Tobago, Barbados, and Jamaica and Canada. So I feel myself very West Indian, and I feel myself, so all the best parts of Canada. I think Canada is also a beautiful space to have had an opportunity to have grown up. So I'm a Caribbean woman. I am 37 this year. Recently married, which is an adventure, a fun one. Excellent. And expecting a son soon.
So I hear. I didn't know at the time. So congratulations and thank you again.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the journey.
Yes, and it definitely, speaking from experience, it's definitely a journey and the gift that keeps giving.
Well, that's good to hear. That is very good to hear. I read a very interesting book on parenthood recently, and what I think has been the most enlightening part of preparing for the journey is recognizing that as much as you prepare, you really never truly be prepared for what is coming.
Yeah, there really is no manual. There's a guidance notes, but that's about it, I think. Because there's always something that's going to stump you that you haven't read about.
I like that guidance.
So, Toni, you've had a very, varied upbringing, and you've had, for what I can see, the best of both worlds: the Caribbean and, obviously, for want of a better word, first world experience in Canada. What do you think has been the biggest influence on you?
You know, I think the biggest influence has been an understanding that everything that you may think that you'd know to be true could also not be true for somebody else.
Right.
So I was in Trinidad until I was around 8 when my mother and I moved to Canada to be with my stepfather.
Okay.
Everything that seemed true about how life should be in Trinidad and Tobago was slightly different in Canada. Right. And the lesson from that was an understanding that, one, you must get comfortable with discomfort.
Yes.
And two, recognizing that other people's realities are important to understand.
Yeah.
Important to understand, and that your reality is not the only one.
Okay. Okay, so when you talk about being getting comfortable with discomfort, it's a topic we've had before. Where have you had to deal with that?
I think every day. Yeah. You know, I think that's the most important lesson. Also from my parents, you know, yeah. I was born to a Trinidadian woman of Bayesian descent, right, and a Jamaican man.
Yes.
And then the people who raised me, I was very lucky in that my parents chose wonderful partners after they separated.
Yes.
My stepfather is South African born Canadian.
Okay.
Stepmother is Katishan born Jamaican.
Wow.
And they are both, what was important is that what all of them taught me is the understanding that just because you're comfortable doesn't mean something is right.
Yeah.
You have to get accustomed with discomfort because you have to continuously challenge yourself to understand that what you see is not the only way of being in the world.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Now, the one thing I haven't really touched on, as it was said, that's about your career. So I would have touched a little bit, obviously, in your bio, but can you tell us a little bit more about what your role actually involves?
So right now, I work with an international development agency that focuses specifically on the empowerment of women and gender equality. I am the deputy representative for the institution, and I am based out of Barbados.
Okay.
Cover 22 countries and territories in Caribbean.
Okay.
My career has basically been one based on international development. I kind of fell into it in some ways in that I just kept pursuing what was interesting to me.
Yes.
And what was interesting to me was an understanding of justice as I saw it, and there were gaps in justice.
Okay.
And I was also always very interested in filmmaking, creativity, theater.
Right.
And for the same reason, I felt that there were so many messages that one could receive through film and theater, and it really changed someone's life in unexpected ways. And I thought through international development, there was a stage that I could apply my skills.
Right.
And so I've always been interested in traveling the world. I think that first move to Canada started a series of moves for my parents and I, and I got accustomed to moving every 3 or so years.
Wow.
So university.
Yeah.
Whatever opportunity came. And I guess, again, what we spoke about is being comfortable with discomfort.
Yes.
If you wanted me to go to China, okay, I'll go, I'll figure it out and adapt.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity in South Africa, the same. Haiti, same. Fiji. Yeah. So I ended up going to a lot of places and learning a lot.
Right. And I think just from hearing your sheer, the mix of your background, your parentage, I think that in itself lent curiosity to travel because there were so many different influences from so many different countries in your life. You know, it must have been a driver.
Absolutely. And I think being born on a Caribbean island, and it's something that has always been instilled in us. So I had a passport. My mom was talking recently. The first time I flew was when I was 5 months.
Okay.
To somewhere else in the Caribbean. And when I was 1 year old, she took me to Kenya.
Right.
Okay. Meeting that she was going to. And I think one of the beautiful things about the Caribbean, we have a lot of wonderful things about the Caribbean and a lot of challenges in the Caribbean. But one of the things is we recognize how small our rocks are.
Yes.
So everybody has family members somewhere else.
Yeah.
Everyone has someone in the space, and even our being as people who were brought to these spaces, we're always kind of curious about traveling. So when I met people who didn't have passports when I was 8, I was I don't understand. So my wanderlust, I think, also comes from being born out of the Caribbean space.
Fabulous. Because when you think about it, because I didn't actually travel, because I'm UK born, but obviously Caribbean based, but I didn't actually travel until I was about 18, 19, and I didn't really have a passport around then. You know, so I think you're right. Being on a smaller island or a smaller space, there's more of a driver to actually explore what's more around you, because I suppose you are so confined to
and it. Absolutely. And there's this kind of, it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah.
When you grew up in the UK, for many of us based in the Caribbean, even if we were in post-colonial spaces, so I was born into the independence of Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
Even though there was still this notion that the real world and the metropole was the UK, and Canada. So, you know, you're always looking forward to studying in the US, the UK, or seeing it.
Yeah.
And so that drives you in some ways, and it also stifles the space because so many people are trying to read the real, in quotation marks, worlds.
And you touched on obviously different challenges, but for you, what has been the most satisfying challenge you've had to overcome, Tony?
You know, I've been thinking about that. I don't know. I really don't know. I think at this point, it's going to be an internal challenge.
Right.
Because I think there's so many more to come, right?
Yes.
Still. But I think that the challenge of consistently questioning what it is I believe to be true.
Right.
And the challenge of being open enough to listen to people who I don't, on the surface, agree with.
Okay.
To come to a space of mutual understanding, even change our positions.
Right.
That's a challenge I think I'm getting better at.
Okay. Now, I mean, obviously you deal with a lot of women. I think the space you're in, you're probably going to meet quite a few people that have very strong opinions. But as a woman, I'm just trying to think where I'm taking this question right now. But could you share, as women, we're not very good at maybe facing challenges. We would tend to back down mostly, I think, because of confidence issues. How do you deal with situations like that?
You know, to be honest, my challenge, the issues I've had with facing challenges, I don't think derive from necessarily my womanhood, because I've a little bit brazen.
Yes. Even,
you know, as a young girl, I felt very empowered. I think growing up, there were a lot of great stories, whether it was Anne of Green Gables or the protagonist from A Wrinkle in Time.
Yes.
My mother definitely raised me in a way that I felt that I could and should be given access to everything.
Okay.
What held me back was the notion of, and I think it's a Caribbeanness that we are taught in school, that certain things that you should not push or question.
Right.
That was something that I had to get over. You know, this notion of being a good, I guess, a good civil servant is what our system trains us to be.
Okay.
And getting past that to say, no. I feel like I must have my idea shared. I must make my contribution heard. I felt like that was something that was important for me to learn. And the Canadian education helped with that.
Okay.
Canadian education. When I first went to Canada, you know, I was calling the professor sir and being very rigid in my interaction with people in authority.
Yes.
But then, of course, you know, too far left is right. But the pendulum there was very... the students have a lot of power, and even if you're 10, you have power.
Yeah.
And that was something that helped me get out of a Caribbean notion of being a little less powerful than you should be. Okay. That makes sense.
Okay. Yes. So, and you talk about empowerment, and I think you were fortunate to feel empowered from a very early age.
Yes.
How important do you think it is for women to become or to feel empowered now?
I think it's critical.
Yeah.
I think it's a critical element of our self-determination. And this empowerment has to be genuine. There's so much going on right now where the sources of empowerment seem shallow.
Yeah.
Yes, sexual freedom and expression is incredibly empowering.
Yes.
Done for yourself.
Yeah. Yes.
But if you're only using this as a source of empowerment to be sexy for other people, and so I think what women have to do is absolutely empower themselves in their strengths, in the strengths of their personalities, in the strengths of their being.
Yeah.
And understand that some of the external things that we're using to empower ourselves, once it can be taken away, right? Once it can be taken away, it's really not a true source of empowerment.
Right, right.
It's something I've been thinking about because I recognize how many people derive empowerment from their relationships, from being woman by a man,
yes,
from considered sexy or beautiful, and not necessarily believing that sexiness and beauty really derives just from their being.
Right. So Tom, just expand on, what does empowerment mean to you then?
Empowerment really means to me and confidence and understanding of self, right?
Yeah.
And that confidence and understanding of self, of course, we're all human, so it ends and it grows, but just a fundamental belief in your humanity and the fact that just because you exist means you deserve to be heard, to be given opportunities, to be able to engage in the ways in which you would like to in the world.
Okay. Thank you for that. Flicking back to your career, because I keep digressing, so I'm loving this conversation. What has been your biggest career triumph, do you believe?
My biggest career triumph. I think that, I hope there are more to come.
yes. You still have a few years left to you, yeah?
yeah. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed and felt proud of was when I was given the opportunity to travel to Haiti to start up an office for the international institution that I work for.
Okay.
And it was very difficult because at that time, the international community was not well perceived in Haiti. It still isn't well perceived.
Yeah.
A lot of the women's movement was very fractured.
Yeah.
And I was about 26. I was a 26-year-old English speaking French speaker.
Yeah. Okay.
Someone took a risk on me, and I will be forever grateful for that person taking a chance on me.
Yeah.
And I was plopped in Haiti to set up the office, and the office is still running today.
Lovely.
And that's something that I'm really proud of.
And so you were obviously given that chance, someone recognized and saw potential in you. How important do you think that is for women to replicate the same? Because one of the things I've noticed in my career is women in some aspects, we've always been threatened by maybe the woman coming behind us or the younger woman or whatever. Whereas I've always taken this tack that we need to be an advocate and a sponsor of women more than just a mentor. We actually need to see if we see good work and we see someone striving to do well and we think they have potential to be a huge supporter of them. How important do you think that is going forward?
I think that's like 70%.
Yeah.
of what makes someone successful.
Yes.
Do not do this for one another. We are really creating legacies that will never go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I think Maya Angelou said something very interesting about the difference between modesty and humility.
Yeah.
She was saying false modesty, she can't stand. Like women who don't acknowledge their own power or the power and strength in other women, that's ridiculous. But understanding that your power and strength is because of the other people who have laid the groundwork for you.
Yes.
That's what is really
the
fundamental block of success and integrity.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people tell stories when we hear these stories of success or they did it on their own. That is an absolute fallacy. There's nothing that we do on our own. Some of us are lucky to be born into inbuilt kind of mentoring and success systems, right?
Yeah.
You know,
so
whether you were born with a rich parent or a parent who is well connected, sometimes you have a head start, but other people, because they are noticed and their work is noticed, and this is something women have to do for women,
is
notice each other and notice each other's work and not say a good word, but actively get involved propelling this person forward as you can.
Totally agree.
I think we've had way too much, and there's some strange notion that we don't see amongst men where someone else doing well means that what you've done will be diminished, or that your legacy will no longer exist because there's a young, brilliant person behind you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The continuation of that young person is that extension of your legacy.
Legacy, definitely, definitely. I totally agree with you on that. Totally agree with you on that. And that's why I think as women, we shouldn't be afraid to walk away from different roles or walk into new environments, because we've left the legacy behind. It's time to move on and replicate it somewhere else.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, carry on. Sorry, Tony.
No, I was saying, just to add to what you're saying, a lot of us also, and this is the issue of empowerment that I was trying to reference earlier, and I don't know that I articulated it well, but when we start to identify ourselves and seek our power from position, or this is the only way in which we know ourselves, this particular kind of work, that is, we also get very, very cagey, protectionist about younger, brilliant people coming up. Threatened.
I totally agree with you there. You touched on a quote by Maya Angelou, who I absolutely love. But share with us a success quote or a mantra that you use and why it's meaningful for you.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Anytime I see a good quote, I take it and I have a draft in my emails. So I have like two or three pages of quotes. And I think my favorite right now is a Martin Luther King Jr. quote.
Okay.
And it's, everyone has the power of greatness, not for fame, but greatness. Because greatness is determined by service.
Right.
And I think that really encapsulates where I am right now. I think we don't need another hero, to quote Tina Turner. I love to look to other people for things that we think don't reside within us.
Yeah.
For them to be better, for them to save us, whether it is our prime minister or our pastor. And what we need to start doing is recognizing that each of us has the power for greatness, and greatness is not in what you achieve. Greatness is in your ability to serve your community.
Yeah. And how do you think that's best done?
I think service is really best done when we apply what our skills are to the gaps that we see in our communities.
Right.
I think it starts with listening, and that's that part of the discomfort, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Sometimes willfully blind.
Yeah.
We don't see what we don't want to see, but when we start to listen and hear what people say is really challenging them, then we're able to apply the skills that we have in collaboration with other people, right?
To
serve, so that people can empower themselves and they themselves serve, not only themselves, but each other.
Yeah. I like that. So still kind of sticking with some literary or cultural theme. What has been a book that's influenced you through your career journey? You talked about Anna Green Gables earlier and A Wrinkle in Time. So I can see you've been a reader or still are a avid reader. So what has been a book that's influenced you throughout your career journey?
Yeah, I love books. I actually put down a book I'm reading right now called Willful Blindness to talk with you.
Yeah.
I think that my favorite books, there's the narrative books that have really empowered me.
Yes.
And then non-narrative books that have empowered me.
Okay.
So with the narrative books, things like Anne of Green Gables, yes, A Wrinkle in Time, yes, all of these books where there are these strong female characters that are incredibly powerful, creative, interesting, and innovative.
Yes.
They've always kind of driven me. And then there are the books like Homegoing. I read that one last year actually.
Yeah.
And that one, the connections the intergenerational connections really just inspired me and empowered me to keep doing what we do and building on strengths, especially women's strengths.
Yes.
And then the non-narrative books. I just finished a book called Sapiens, which has really rocked my world. and it's in a good way.
Yes.
Bell Hooks books, all about love. That something that centers feminism in an understanding of love and in an understanding of balance.
Right.
These are the books that really help you maintain balance. Because you get, in the work that we do, you can get very angry.
Right.
Very angry at the levels of violence that you see that women experience. You could get very angry at the levels of violence that people, men, perpetrate on themselves and on their partners. Figuring out how to get to the base of why, what are the feminist principles that we truly believe in, and how can we address these issues from a place of love and not anger, was something that was really powerful for me about All About Love.
Right. You touched on the environment you're working in. You talked about the violence and the things that people can do to each other and themselves. So being in that environment yourself, how do you maintain, I suppose, mental self-care and personal self-care in those environments?
My mother is probably my mentor.
Okay.
My mother's my mentor.
That was going to be my next question. We'll come back to that.
My mother is a woman who's extremely balanced, and she has done incredible things in her life. And she has always made time for the things that refuel her. Right. I don't think she would have been able to do those wonderful things in her life without making time for her family, reading, and making time for herself and her friends. And so I think I very early on started to understand work-life balance before it was even a thing, that if you're not well rested, you know, if you don't get the kind of sleep that you require, if you don't get the kind of peace that you require, you're never going to actually be able to address strategically the issue you really want to see changed in this world.
Right.
That's how I've been able to keep that balance. You know, you make your time for yourself, you make your time for your friends and your family, and you keep reading, because recognizing that no matter how much experience you have, there will never be a moment in your life where you know and start learning.
Yeah.
A young man, he was older than me, but he was still young, who worked at one very popular consulting firm and started his own consulting business globally to support people development, once told me he stopped learning after he left the consulting firm he was in. And I was like, I definitely don't want to work for this person. How could you think?
Because, I mean, for me, learning is how you keep on evolving.
It's the only way. And the notion you have learned everything that you need to learn.
Bring
to the way in which you work with other people.
There's almost a level of arrogance I'm feeling with that comes with that statement, but I suppose each to their own.
The challenge is that if you're giving advice to countries and governments, there's no place for that arrogance.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's very, very true. It's very true. I'm just moving on. We touched on your mom being your mentor, and my question was going to be, if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
It would be my mother. I mean, I've been born into mentorship. I've been very lucky in that way. She is an amazing human being.
Yeah.
Also, being able to see your mentor up close means that you don't really idolize anybody. You don't put people on pedestals.
Yes.
Recognize that brilliant people have flaws.
Yeah.
And that does not detract from their brilliance. In fact, when they are open and honest about their flaws, that makes their greatness even more palpable.
Yeah.
And so I don't want any more than I have with my mother. You know, she teaches me things every single day.
That's lovely. And you touched on your flaws, or as I call them, imperfections. So what would you say are your imperfections? How do you embrace them?
Impatience.
You didn't have to hesitate with that.
No, I knew it's something I've been working on. Impatience and that impatience can manifest itself as dismissiveness. It can feel arrogant to some people, and I like to get feedback from people so that they can tell me, and so I can keep working on it. I get impatient sometimes with myself, with people, with our world, and that's not useful.
So how do you manage that? How do you handle that impatience?
I try to be more self-aware, and when I can feel it coming, sometimes literally do the brain work, and it's hard brain work, of telling myself to stop, listen, and relax.
Definitely. And it works?
Sometimes.
sometimes. Still a work in progress, as you said.
I am a work in progress.
So, Tania, looking back, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
I think, you know, when you look back now, I really like my teenage self. She was fun. She was much more interested in her friends and work than she was boys.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think I would give her some advice with regards to planning.
Right. You know,
nothing is going to go exactly how you plan, and that's best.
So learn how to roll with the punches.
Just roll, go with the flow.
Yeah.
Understanding failure, you know. I did well enough on the what we used to call the CXC exams. Yeah. I understand now the CSEC.
Yes.
I did well enough, but I didn't do as well as everybody else.
Right.
To me at the time, it was like the end of the world.
Yeah.
But again, people gave me a chance, and that was the beginning of the world for me, because I had always been quick at certain things, which meant I didn't make as much effort to study.
Right. Yeah.
And understanding that failure is a part of life, and having that happen early, even though failure is subjective, right? Because it's not fail. Yeah. Even though failure is subjective, having that early made it part and parcel of life.
Yeah.
So I was very balanced. I didn't expect to consistently be getting only the top grades all the time. I didn't expect to be at the top of my class all the time.
Right.
And did I understood that part of it was it, and the majority of it was hard work.
Yes. So you talked about somebody, you're not doing as well as you could have done on your exams, which obviously we know in the Caribbean it's highly prized from academia. And you said that someone gave you a chance. What do you think stood out about you for them to say, okay, look at that girl. She's got something going. Let me give her that opportunity.
I think it was a few things. I think I had a lot of drive, and My teachers thought I was going to do better because I was one of the most vocal in the class. I was always engaged, and I was quite, I always made myself heard. So I think there was that. I think there was the fact that the teachers, and this is, I'm going to be very frank, they knew my mother and they knew my family.
Right.
That I should be given a chance as well because I came from good stock.
Yeah.
Which is a blessing that not many people have.
Yes.
It's in some ways unfair. I did benefit from that privilege. And I think the last part is that the teacher at the time who was the acting principal, I think she's amazing. Her name is Valerie Taylor.
Right.
Felt that there was more that was required for persons to excel than grades.
Right. And
she asked me a question. She said, if we let you into sixth form, what will you do? You said you wanted to do a play, because I always wanted to have and mount a play. I said, yes, I'm going to. If I do it, I would do a play called Pride and Prejudice.
Right.
Thing. And I that's what I would want to do. And she said, okay, well, if we let you in, you have to do this play. And to me, it was one of the most best kind of opportunity to reach, to strive for, right?
Yeah.
And so she let me in, and I got about doing this play, and I got a group of my girlfriends together. I went to Bishop Anstey High School in Trinidad and Tobago, and it was a fantastic experience. And every child's experience in school should be as fantastic as ours was. You know, you shouldn't have these tears of schools where you don't invest in students as much as you do in other schools.
Yeah.
But the level of investment that we had, the women, the young women that I grew up with, came up with the play. We found the play. We paid our royalties. Sent royalties to England to do the play. One of my friends directed it. Another colleague, she not only designed, but she sewed our costumes.
Right.
We raised the funds for the play. We got boys from the adjoining school, Queen's Royal College, to come on board. And we mounted this play for 3 nights and made $40,000 at the time.
Wow. I think the key there, what I'm hearing is that the headmistress, the teacher, understood or tapped into what your motivators were.
She did.
I think that's key in any walk of life, is actually understanding what that is that keeps you and drives you forward.
It is, and she, beyond just my personal motivators, and I think she saw me and she understood me.
Yeah.
She also understood that a well-rounded human being is not just someone who does well on tests.
Yeah, very much.
And it's someone who is creative and who knows how to implement and who takes risks.
Yeah.
And so she really made sure that we did those things.
Yeah.
I think she's an amazing human being.
It definitely sounds like it. So, Tony, last couple of questions for you. What's your definition of success?
My definition of success. For me, it is a life well served. It is life full of joy and love, laughter, friends. Family and service. One in which service.
Right. Okay.
Service. That's to me success. I think, you know, with each few years,
yeah,
I changed my idea of what success is. You know, at one time it was making a lot of money, at another time a certain position in my organization.
Yeah.
Another time it was being married, even though that did not happen at the time, and I'm extremely lucky it didn't. Because I think when you get married and you think that this is a success, you don't recognize that marriage itself takes a lot of work.
Most definitely.
A lot of work. I feel more balanced that this notion of success, it's so subjective.
Yeah.
Dynamic. But I know that some of the steady things for me that continuously define success is healthy relationships with my friends and my family.
Right.
And a certain level of enjoyment. Life is such a blessing.
Yeah.
We don't know what comes before. We don't know what comes after. We're always trying to theorize about what it is.
Yeah.
I think that this is the challenge we have on Earth, is to figure out how can we enjoy this moment?
Yes.
That doesn't detract from other people's ability to enjoy the moment, but builds on the blessing that we have and the privileges that we all have.
Very much. And my last question, I know we've touched on this a little bit, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What does it mean to you to be your own hero, Tony?
Wow, what a question. What does it mean to
I aim to please.
It means to me that quote that that Martin Luther King had, Jr., and that Maya Angelou has, which is acknowledging that greatness lies within each and every one of us, and that greatness doesn't have to be, you know, a being the most impactful civil rights leader or an amazing poet, but it just means being the best that you can be.
Right.
And as kind to other people as you can be, and not in any way pretending that your strengths do not exist.
right? The false modesty is not useful.
Yeah.
Acknowledging where your strengths are, and also acknowledging that those strengths would be nothing without all of the other people who have allowed you to thrive.
Excellent.
So that's what being my own hero is right now. I think if you call me in another 6 months, it will be managing a night's sleep with the baby. But for right now, that's it.
Excellent. I love that. I love that. I love that. So thanks for that, Tony. Well, that was definitely my last question. So all that remains to be said is thank you so much for the illuminating. That's the word today. Illuminating conversation. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And when are you due, by the way?
I'm due April 2nd.
Wow, so not long. So hang on in there. I'm even more blessed and grateful for the time you've given for me this afternoon. Thank you so much for that.
And thank you for the opportunity. I think the work that you do is amazing. And I think that all of the decisions and choices you have made in your life have led you to a moment where you're really able to positively impact so many people's lives.
It's, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, everybody, as usual, that was another fantastic conversation with and yet another phenomenal woman. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation. And a few things I took away from that, which were quite key and come up in a number of the conversations, is getting uncomfortable with discomfort. So, you know, put your plate, understand that things are going to be uncomfortable, but you have to get comfortable with it if you're going to move forward. And the other thing that stood out for me is the role that we as women play in empowering other women, those coming up behind us, our own children. So there's a couple of key points I took from that, and I do so hope you enjoy it, and I hope everything goes well with Tony and the impending birth of her baby son. So I hope you enjoyed this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. And as ever, it's my pleasure to show up here every week and connect with like-minded women who want to live their life to its fullest and be empowered to take their career to the next level. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Phenomenal Woman, and I know you've definitely loved it. So please, please, please share this on all your social media networks, Facebook, Instagram, and let all the other phenomenal women that you know share in what you're hearing. You can connect with me and join the conversation via janicesutherland.com. And on Facebook and Instagram, I am down as I am Janice Sutherland, and links are in the show notes. So remember, you are the author of your own story. You control the narrative, and you have the power to give your life story a happy ending. So own it. Until next time, I look forward to connecting with you.